Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango.
This is a podcast where we are slowly but surely making our way through the story of the Stormlight Archive and the Cosmere overall. Currently on book 3, Oathbringer. But last time we started part 2 of Oathbringer.
Yeah, Yasna's back and they had like a discussion about stuff, about how like Yasna doesn't know a lot of the discoveries that they know, and so it feels weird to her to be like, to not know something.
Yes. We also did the interludes where most of them weren't really important, but we did get the first Venli interlude where There was people have been kind of vague about who the Voidbringers are, right? We've gotten kind of bits and pieces. Soon it will get spelled out to you in a very long monologue. But a very long monologue is going to explain exactly what the Voidbringers are soon. It ruined the pacing that I had planned for these episodes.
Was it the third chapter we were supposed to do?
Not for this one. It's the one after that. It's two chapters from now. And I was going to move it up into this one because the third chapter we were going to cover today is also really long. But as it turns out, everything is just... There's two back-to-back chapters that are really long and are probably going to end up being their own episodes each, so. But, they're very good chapters, so it's worth it. The other thing was Dalinar met with the Queen of Thelenna in the Visions.
Mm-hmm.
Where it seems like, she respects him a little bit more now because he was more honest with her and wasn't really
being political. She doesn't like all the flowery...
Yes.
Political talk.
Yes. This week, we are starting... Fuck. God damn it. Oathbringer, chapter symbols. God damn it. This is... So, chapter 35 is titled First Into the Sky. If I can open this up. This is the Bridge 4 chapter symbol. So this symbol is used when the POV character is a member of Bridge 4 that isn't Kaladin.
Mm-hmm.
The epigraph reads, "You think yourself so clever, but my eyes are not those of some petty noble to be clouded by a false nose and some dirt on the cheeks." So I told you last time that these epigraphs are from the other shards, from the other gods.
Mm-hmm.
To Hoid, I will tell you because I went and I looked around, it doesn't explicitly say it anywhere. This first set that we've been reading are from Endowment, who is the god of Warbreaker.
Mm.
So when she's saying, like, my eyes are not those of some petty noble to be clouded by a false nose and some dirt on the cheeks, she's kind of also throwing shade at, like, in Warbreaker, the meeting that you have with Hoid is between the people of the god's palace, or is where the gods go and they like hear a story from him. But this chapter is from Sigzil's point of view, and it starts with Sigzil, and he's dreaming that he's back home in Aesir studying for the exams that would qualify him for real schooling. He wakes up to Bridge 4 scrambling to try and be the first to get breakfast that Rock had made for them. All the members are like pushing and shoving each other out of the way. He gets up and begins to wash his face and shave, and the razor nicks his cheek and he unconsciously sucks in Stormlight to heal it. He dresses, slides his new notebook into his pocket, and steps out into the common room. He stopped short as Lopin's face swung down right in front of him. The Herdazian was stuck by the bottoms of his feet to the storming ceiling. "Hey," Lopin said. "Lopin, what are you doing?" "Practicing. I've got to show them how good I am, Hooch. It's like with women, only it involves sticking yourself to the ceiling and learning not to spill food on the heads of people you like." "Move, Lopin." "Ah, you have to ask the right way. I'm not one-armed anymore. I can't be shoved around. Say, do you know how to get two-armed Herdazian to do what you want?" "If I did, we wouldn't be having this conversation." "Well, you take away both of their spears, obviously." He grinned. A few feet away, Rock laughed with a loud, "Ha!" Lopin wiggled his fingers at Sigzil as if to taunt him. Lopin's Bridge 4 tattoo remained, as did Sigzil's and the others that had learned to suck in Stormlight. Only Kaladin's tattoo would melt off when taking in Stormlight. His scars still refused to heal as well. Remember that one for me, Hooch, Lopin said. I'll need sure lots and lots of new jokes. Also sleeves, twice as many of those, except on vests, then the same number. How did you even manage to get up there so you could stick your feet? No, don't start. I don't actually want to know. Sigzel ducked under Lopin. Sigzel shouted to get the attention of Bridge 4. Don't forget, the captain wanted us up and ready for inspection by second bell. Sigzel could barely be heard. Where was Teft? They actually listened when he gave orders. Sigzel shook his head, weaving his way toward the door. He slipped out into the hallway. Perhaps Teft had gone to inspect the other crews. He'd been given responsibility for training them. Hopefully it wasn't the other thing. Kaladin bunked in his own small suite of rooms. Sigzel made his way there, going over his scribbles in the notebook. He used the Lethe glyphs, as was acceptable for a man out here. What would life be like if he hadn't turned into a failure and a disappointment? If he'd passed the tests instead of getting into trouble, needing to be rescued by the man who had become his master? The list of problems first, he decided, reaching Kaladin's door and knocking. Kaladin called Sigzel in, and he found the bridge leader doing push-ups on the floor because Kaladin is a fucking, like, Chad. Sigzel tells Kaladin that he has a lot to go over, the first thing being that Kaladin needs a real scribe, not Sigzel. They begin to go through the list. Sigzel says that they need to get separate housing for the men with families, as multiple members of Bridge 4 were beginning to get engaged. Some already were married, which Sigzel had not known until he'd found one of their wives dropping off food. He also brings up that really? Drahi has been... Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Good for them.
He also brings up that Drahi has been courting a man, which Kaladin already knew about. Sigzel asks if Drahi will need to apply for social reassignment, and realizes from Kaladin's face that that must not exist in Alethkar. Kaladin asks if it's really that big a deal, and Sigzel says that he's more concerned about the four different religions that are represented within Bridge 4. And Kaladin's like, what are you talking about? There had to be a way to explain this. What would his master do? Now, Sigzel said, everybody knows that Mishim, the third moon, is the most clever and wily of the moons. All right. And this is relevant why? Because of a story. Hush. Please, listen, sir. You see, there are three moons, and the third moon is the cleverest, and she doesn't want to be in the sky, sir. She wants to escape. So one night, she tricked the queen of the Naten people. This was a long time ago, so they were still around. I mean, they're still around now, but there were more around then, sir. And the moon tricked her, and then they traded places until they stopped, and now the Naten people have blue skin. Does that make sense? Kaladin blinked. I have no idea what you just said. Well, it's obviously fanciful, not the real reason that the Naten people have blue skin. And, it was supposed to explain something? It's how my master always did things, Sigzel said. He'd tell a story anytime someone was confused or when people were angry at him. And, well, it changed everything, somehow. He looked to Kaladin. I suppose, Kaladin said slowly, that maybe you feel like a moon? No, not really. It was about responsibility, but he had really not explained it well. Master Hoyd had named him a full world singer, and here he couldn't even tell a story straight.
I forgot his master was Hoyd.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
And he's very bad at doing what Hoyd does. Sigzel says that the men don't have any direction. Kaladin gave them purpose, but now that they were free, there were more factors to think about. What if not everyone was able to draw in Stormlight? What was their place in the army? They were no longer guards released from that duty to begin training as Radiants, but what was a Knight Radiant? He asks where the men are to go if they need guidance or a moral center. The Ardents ignore them because of their association to Dalinar, and Kaladin asks if Sigzel wants to be that person, and he tells him that he'll allow it as the men like and listen to Sigzel. But he makes it clear that he wants Sigzel trying to understand what the others want out of their lives and respecting it, not trying to project onto them what he believes they should want. But sir, some things are just wrong. You know what Teft has gotten into, and Huio, he's been visiting the prostitutes. That's not forbidden. Storms, I've had some sergeants who suggested it as the key to a healthy mind in battle. It's wrong, sir. It's imitating an oath without the commitment. Every major religion agrees to this, except the Reshi, I suppose. But they're pagans, even among pagans. Your master teach you to be this judgmental? Sigzel stopped short. I'm sorry, Sig, Kaladin said. No, he said the same thing about me. All the time, sir. Kaladin says that he won't forbid Sigzel from expressing his morals, but he needs to make sure not to present them as the code of Bridge 4. Sigzel nodded, hurrying to catch up. That does raise another issue, sir. Bridge 4 is down to 28 members after our losses during the first Everstorm. Might be time for some recruitment. Recruitment, Kaladin said. He cocked his head. Well, if we lose any more members, we won't, Kaladin said. He always thought that. Sigsel asks what happens if someone else in the army is displaying the signs of joining the Windrunners, or if Bridge 4 begin to brand their own Spren. Do they dissolve Bridge 4? The idea of dissolving Bridge 4 seemed to pain Kaladin almost as much as the idea of losing men in battle. They walked in silence for a short time. They weren't going to the Bridge 4 barracks after all. Kaladin tells Sigsel to put out a call for recruitment, and Sigsel is about to ask where they're going when he's cut off by Lynn joining them. She tells Kaladin that the quartermaster is looking for him, and Kaladin started to lead them in that direction. Kaladin eyed Lynn as they walked. You're the one who's been helping my men, right? Lynn, was it? Yes, sir. In fact, it seems you've been making excuses to run messages to Bridge 4. Yes, sir. You're not afraid of the Lost Radiance, then? Frankly, sir, after what I saw on the battlefield, I'd rather be on your side than bet on the opposition. Kaladin nodded. Lynn, how would you like to join the Windrunners? The woman stopped in place, jaw dropping. Sir, she saluted. Sir, I'd love that. Excellent, Kaladin said. Sig, can you get her our ledgers and accounts? Lynn's hand drooped from her brow. Ledgers? Accounts? The men will also need letters written to family members, Kaladin said, and we should probably write a history of Bridge 4. People will be curious, and a written account will save me from having to explain it all the time. Oh, Lynn said. A scribe. Of course, Kaladin said. You're a woman, aren't you? I thought you were
asking... Kaladin!
I mean, in the High Prince's visions, there were women who were Knights Radiant.
Kaladin!
And with Brightness Shallan. She blushed. Sir, I didn't join the scouts because I liked sitting around staring at ledgers. If that's what you're offering, I'll have to pass. Her shoulders fell, and she wouldn't meet Kaladin's eyes. Sigsel found, strangely, that he wanted to punch his captain. Not hard, mind you, just a gentle wake-up punch. Kaladin tells her that they'll be having tryouts to join the Order, and she's welcome to participate in those if she wants. She grows excited at this and runs off. Kaladin watched her go, then grunted softly. Sigsel, without even thinking about it, mumbled, "Did your master teach you to be that insensitive?" Kaladin eyed him. I have a suggestion, sir, Sigsel continued. Try to understand what people want out of life and respect that, rather than projecting onto them what you think they should. Shut it, Sig. Yes, sir. Sorry, sir. They continued on their way, and Kaladin cleared his throat. You don't have to be so formal with me, you know. I know, sir, but you're a Light Eyes now, and a Shard Bearer, and, well, it feels right. Kaladin stiffened, but didn't contradict him. In truth, Sigsel had always felt awkward trying to treat Kaladin like any other bridgeman. Some of the others could do it, Teft and Rock, Lopin in his own strange way, but Sigsel felt more comfortable when the relationship was set out and clear, captain and his clerk. Moash had been closest to Kaladin, but he wasn't in Bridge 4 any longer. Kaladin hadn't said what Moash had done, only that he had removed himself from our fellowship. Kaladin got stiff and unresponsive whenever Moash's name was mentioned. Kaladin asks if there's anything else they need to discuss, and Sigsel asks what their place in the army is now. Kaladin says that they're no longer an Alethi military organization, and that they fight for all mankind. And Sigsel asks where they land in the chain of command, then. Do they listen to Elokar? Are they Alethi? If they are, then where do they fall in the social hierarchy? Is Kaladin not a Shardbearer in the Kolin court? Who pays the wages of Bridge 4? What about the other bridge crews? If the Kolin princedom gets into a battle, can they call on Bridge 4 to assist? Kaladin is struck by it all, and he says that he thinks Sigsel is wasted in Bridge 4, and that he should have been a scholar. Sigsel says that he wasn't good enough and failed the exams back in Aesir. Then the exams were stupid, Kaladin said, and Aesir lost out because they missed the chance to have you. Sigsel smiled. I'm glad they did. And strangely, he felt it was true. Honestly, I feel like Lynn. I don't want to be huddled over a ledger when Bridge 4 takes to the air. I want to be the first into the sky. I think you'll have to fight Lopin for that distinction, Kaladin said with a chuckle. Come on. He strode into the quartermaster's office. Finally, the quartermaster said. I'm tired of having these here, drawing everyone's eyes and making me sweat like a spy with too many spren. He shuffled over to a pair of large black sacks that in the corner. The quartermaster hefted them and handed a sack to Kaladin and another to Sigsel. They clinked when moved and were surprisingly heavy. Sigsel undid the ties and glanced into his. Emeralds. In a moment, Sigsel realized that the guards filling the room weren't here to get something from the quartermaster. They were here to protect his wealth. That's the Royal Emerald Reserve, the quartermaster said. How you talked the High Prince into letting you take it is beyond me. We're only borrowing them, Kaladin said. We'll have them back before evening arrives. They'll be warned, some will be done. We'll need to check them out tomorrow again, and the day after that. I could buy a princedom for that much, the quartermaster said. What in Kalec's name do you need them for? Sigsel, however, had already guessed. He grinned like a fool. We're going to practice being radiant. And that is the end of the chapter.
Let's go.
Chapter 36 is titled Hero, and it has Dalinar's flashback symbol. And it is 24 years ago.
Sure, definitely, a hero.
Dalinar listened as Evie told him that they would need to replace the fireplace in their home. She was pregnant with Adolin, and they watched the flames spread as they dance. Evie says that it looks like they're playing, while Dalinar sees it more as a battle. She asks him to just enjoy his life now that the fighting is over, but he doesn't seem able to. He perks up at any sign of a conflict. "It's like you're dead," Evie said. Dalinar looked over at her. "It's like you only live when you can fight, when you can kill. Like a blackness from old stories. You live only by taking lives from others." She was a sweet, loving woman who deserved better than the treatment he gave her. He forced himself to go back and sit down beside her. They debate what exactly Spren are and what they're made of. Dalinar seems stuck on it, while Evie is quick to leave the mystery to her god. She asks why he even thinks of it, and he remembers a few nights ago when he'd been with Gavilar and Navani. Navani had been filled with such passion and excitement while talking about her research into Spren, while Gavilar had ignored her. Evie tells him to enjoy the moment and contemplate what the One has given him. He tries to, but is unable to find peace. He asks if men can change, like the Spren do. He says that he isn't sure he can change his nature, and she tells him to essentially pray to the One, which he found strange. His religion is based around going through an intermediary with the Ardentia, but Evie's had no such organization. "If you wish to meet the One in person, you must travel to the Valley," she said. "There you can speak with the One, or to his avatar, and be granted..." "The old magic," Dalinar hissed. "The Night Watcher. Evie, don't say things like that." Fortunately, she spoke of it no more. She closed her eyes and hummed softly. Finally, a knock came at the outer door to his rooms. Dalinar and Evie exited into their sitting room where Gavilar was waiting for them. Gavilar wrapped a set of papers against the palm of his hand. "What?" Dalinar asked. "Rathalos," Gavilar said, shoving the papers toward Evie as she entered. "Again?" Dalinar said. "They're demanding your blade back. They claim that Tanalan's heir has returned and deserves this shard, as you never won it in a true contest." Dalinar felt cold. "Now, I know this to be patently false, because when we fought at Rathalos all those years ago, you said you dealt with the heir. You did deal with the heir, did you not, Dalinar?" He remembered that day. He remembered a weeping child holding a shard blade. The thrill had vanished in a moment. "He was a child, Gavilar," Dalinar said. "Damnation! He's a descendant of the old regime. That was storms, that was a decade ago. He's old enough to be a threat. The whole city is going into rebellion. The entire region. If we don't act, the whole Crownlands could break off." Dalinar smiled. The emotion shocked him, but surely someone would need to go and rout the rebels. He turned and caught sight of Evie. She was beaming at him. "You spared the child." He could barely lift the blade. I gave him to his mother and told her to hide him. She pulled him close. He felt a swelling of pride. He had endangered the kingdom. How would people react if they knew the Blackthorn himself had broken before a crisis of conscience? In that moment, he didn't care, so long as he could be a hero to this woman. "Well, I suppose rebellion was to be expected," Gavilar said as he stared out the window. "It's been years since the formal unification. People are going to start asserting their independence." He raised his hand toward Dalinar. "I know what you want, brother, but you'll have to forbear. I'm not sending an army. But I can nip this thing with politics. We can't have a show of force be our only method of maintaining unity, or Elokar will spend his entire life putting out fires after I'm gone. We need people to start thinking of Alethkar as a unified kingdom, not separate regions always looking for an advantage against one another." "Sounds good," Dalinar said. It wasn't going to happen. Not without the sword to remind them. For once, however, he was fine not being the one to point that out. And that is the end of the chapter. So Dalinar did not kill that little boy.
Yay!
The shame he felt at the end of that chapter was at having failed his brother, not at having killed a child.
Yay!
So, chapter 37, The Last Time We March. The epigraph reads, "You mustn't worry yourself about race. It is a pity about Aeona and Skye, but they were foolish, violating our pact from the very beginning." It has, in this chapter, has Bridge 4 symbol. Numu, Huku, Maki, Aki, Aya, Lunamore had always been taught that the first rule of warfare was to know your enemy. Fortunately, making a good stew was a lot like going to war. Lunamore, called Rock by his friends on account of their thick lowlander tongues being incapable of proper speech, stirred his cauldron. He had placed the cauldron on a plateau of the Shattered Plains and was surprised to discover that he had missed this place. In those chasms, Lunamore had found himself again after a long time being lost. Renewed life, renewed purpose. The rest of Bridge Four stood arrayed on the plateau, listening to Kaladin. Nearby, one of the plateaus flashed as Renar and Colin worked the Oath Gate. Lunamore tried not to be distracted by that. He wanted to look out westward, toward the old war camps. Not much longer now to wait, he thought. Kaladin is addressing the members of Bridge 4 who have been joined by other soldiers from throughout Dalinar's army. He tells them that he doesn't really know how he learned to use Stormlight, so they'll have to stumble through it together. He has them all speak the first ideal to themselves to start. He tells Lopin, Sigzil, Pete, and Teft, who have already started glowing, to take the others into smaller groups to help them. Kaladin looked around. Where's Teft? He was only just noticing? Lunamore loved their captain, but he got distracted sometimes. Teft didn't come back to the barracks last night, sir, Layton called, looking uncomfortable. Kaladin says that he'll help the scouts then, and that he wants everyone on the plateau glowing before the day is done. Lunamore handed off his stirring to Dabbit. The young bridgeman didn't talk, and hadn't since Lunamore had helped Kaladin pull him from the battlefield. He had become something of an unofficial mascot for the team, as he'd been the first bridgeman that Kaladin had saved. When bridgeman passed Dabbit, they gave a subtle salute. Huio adds something to the pot, which causes Rock to yell at him. Rock tries to get Lopin to tell Huio off, but Lopin is ranting to his charges about sticking himself to the ceiling earlier. Huio forces Rock to try the change he made, and Rock is surprised at how good it is. He tells the Herdazian to do the same for all the pots. Now, where was Hobber? The man couldn't be too far away. That was one advantage of having an assistant chef who could not walk. He's usually stayed put where you put him. Watch me now carefully, Lopin said to his group. All right, here it is. I, the Lopin, will now fly. You may applaud as you feel is appropriate. He jumped up, then crashed back to the plateau. Lopin, Kaladin called. You're supposed to be helping the others, not showing off. Sorry, Gon, Lopin said. He quivered on the ground, his face pressed to the stone and didn't rise. Did you stick yourself to the ground? Just part of the plan, Gon. If I'm to become a delicate cloud upon the sky, I must first convince the ground that I am not abandoning her. Like a worried lover, sure, she must be comforted and reassured that I will return following my dramatic and regal ascent to the sky. You're not a king, Lopin, Drahi said. We've been over this. Of course I am not. I am a former king. You're obviously one of the stupid ones I mentioned earlier. Lunamore slowed. Why was Kaladin kneeling before Hobber's stool, holding out a gemstone? Ah, Lunamore thought. I had to breathe to draw it in, Kaladin explained softly. I'd been doing it unconsciously for weeks, maybe months, before Teft explained the truth to me. Sir, Hobber said, sir, I'm no Radiant. I was never that good with the spear. I'm barely a passable cook. A month ago, the assassin in white had swept through the king's palace, and the attack had left Hobber with dead legs. Kaladin folded the gemstone in Hobber's fingers. Just try, the captain said softly. Being a Radiant isn't so much about your strength or skill, but about your heart. And yours is the best of all of us. The captain seemed intimidating to many outside. Mango, I'm really sorry if I lose it a little bit during this chapter, but it might happen. The captain seemed intimidating to many outsiders, but there was also an astonishing tenderness to the man. Kaladin gripped Hobber on the arm and almost seemed to be tearing up. Some days it seemed that you couldn't break Kaladin's Stormblessed with all the stones on Roshar. Then one of his men would get wounded, and you'd see him crack. Kaladin headed back toward the scouts he'd been helping, and Lunamore jogged to catch up. He bowed to the little god who rode on the bridge captain's shoulder, then asked, "You think Hobber can do this thing, Kaladin?" "I'm sure he can. I'm sure all of Bridge 4 can. And perhaps some of these others." "Ha! Finding a smile on your face, Kaladin Stormblessed, is like finding lost sphere in your soup. Surprising, yes, but very nice, too. Come, I have drink you must try. I need to get back to... Come, drink, you must try." Kaladin slurped it down. "Hey, that's pretty good, Rock. It's not my recipe. Huio has changed this thing. I now have to either promote him or push him offside of plateau." "Promote him to what?" "To Ersic Lowlander, second class." "You might be too fond of that term, Rock." Nearby, Lopin talked to the ground, against which he was still pressed. "Don't worry, dear one. The Lopin is vast enough to be possessed by many, many forces, both terrestrial and celestial. I must soar to the air, for if I were to remain only on the ground, surely my growing magnitude would cause the land to crack and break." Lunamore looked to Kaladin. "I am fond of term, yes, but only because this thing has astounding number of applications among you." Kaladin grinned, watching the men. Drahi suddenly raised his long arms and called out, "Ha!" He was glowing with stormlight. Bizig soon followed. That would fix his hand. He too had been injured by the assassin in white. "This will work, Rock. The men have been close to the power for months now. And once they have it, they'll be able to heal. I won't have to go into battle worrying which of you I'll lose." "Kaladin," Lunamore said softly, "this thing we have begun. It is still war. Men will die. Bridge 4 will be protected by their power. And the enemy? They will not have power? Surely I do not wish to dampen Kaladin Stormblast when he is optimistic, but nobody is ever perfectly safe. This is sad truth, my friend." "Maybe," Kaladin admitted. He got a distant look on his face. "Your people only let younger sons go to war, right?" Only Tuana Likina, fourth son or younger, can be wasted in war. First, second, and third sons are too valuable. Fourth son and younger, so hardly ever. Ha! You do not know the size of Horn Eater families. Still, it has to mean fewer men dying in battle. Peaks are a different place, and not just because we have right amount of air for brains to work. To attack another peak is costly and difficult, requiring much preparation and time. We speak of this thing more than we do him. It sounds nice. You will visit with me someday, you and Albridge, for, as you are family now. Ground, Lopin insisted. I will still love you. I'm not attracted to anyone the way I am to you. Whenever I leave, I'll come right back. Kaladin glanced at Lunamore. Perhaps when that one is away from too much toxic air, he will be less... Lopin? Though upon consideration, this thing would be sad. Kaladin chuckled. Then he leaned in. What happened to your brother, Rock? My two brothers are well, so far as I know. And the third? The one who died moving you from fourth to third and making you a cook instead of a soldier? Don't deny it. Is sad story. And today is not day for sad stories. Today is day for laughter, stew, flight. These things. And hopefully something even grander. Kaladin patted him on the shoulder. If you ever need to talk, I'm here. That is a good thing to know. Though today I believe someone else wishes to talk. Lunamore nodded toward someone crossing a bridge onto their plateau. The king has been eager to speak with you. Ha! Asked us several times if we knew when you would return, as if we are appointment keepers for our glorious flying leader. Yes, Kaladin said. He came to see me the other day. Kaladin braced himself visibly, then walked to the king. Lunamore positioned himself, working on the soup where he could listen. Windrunner, Elikar said. It seems you're right. Your men have had their powers restored. How soon will they be ready? They're in fighting shape already, Your Majesty, but to master their powers, well, I can't say, honestly. Have you given thought to my request? Will you fly me to Kolinar so we can reclaim the city? I'll do as my commander tells me. No. I'm asking you, personally. Will you come? Will you help me reclaim our homeland? Yes, Kaladin said softly. Give me some time, a few weeks at least, to train my men. I prefer to bring a few Squire Windrunners with us, and if we're lucky, I might be able to leave a full Radiant behind to lead if something happens to me. But either way, yes, Elokar. I'll go with you to Alethkar. Good. We have some time, as Uncle wishes to try contacting people in Kolinar using his visions. Perhaps 20 days? Can you train your squires in that time? I'll have to, Your Majesty. Elokar stayed to watch the bridgemen practice. Their old bridge from bridge runs had been repurposed for moving people around these plateaus closest to Narak. Lunamore patted the wood. They'd thought this lost, but a salvage party had discovered it wedged in a chasm a short distance away. Dalinar had agreed to have it hauled up at Teft's request. Considering what it had been through, the old bridge was in good shape. It was made of tough wood, Bridge 4 was. Kaladin was wrong. Lunamore hadn't become a cook. He'd always been one. Yes, he'd once trained with a bow, but soldiers needed to eat. He closed his eyes, kneading and humming his mother's song to a beat he could almost barely just faintly hear. When Arryn crossed onto the platform, done with his Oathgate duty for now, and began to walk towards Elokar to watch from the sidelines. Hey, Lunamore said. Renarin. Renarin jumped. I could use some help with this bread, Lunamore said. Renarin smiled immediately. All the youth ever wanted was to be treated like the rest of them. Lunamore didn't push Renarin to talk. Some people you wanted to press and draw them out. Others you wanted to let move at their own pace. But where is his god? Lunamore could see Allspren. Prince Renarin had bonded one, except Lunamore had never been able to spot it. Prince Bridge 4 is doing well, Renarin finally said. He'll have them all drinking Stormlight soon. Likely so, Lunamore said. Ha! But they have much time until they catch up to you. Truth Watcher is good name. More people should watch truth instead of lies. Renarin blushed. I suppose it means I can't be in Bridge 4 anymore, does it? Doesn't it? Why not? I'm a different order of Radiant, Renarin says, eyes down. You have power to heal. The surges of progression and illumination. I'm not sure how to make the second of them work, though. Shallan has explained it 7 times, but I can't create even the smallest illusion. Something's wrong. Still, only healing for now? This thing will be very useful to Bridge 4. I can't be Bridge 4 anymore. That is nonsense. Bridge 4 is not Windrunners. Then what is it? It is us. It is me, it is them, it is you. He nodded toward Dabbid. That one, he will never hold spear again. He will not fly, but he is Bridge 4. I am forbidden to fight, but I am Bridge 4. And you might have fancy title and different powers. He leaned forward. But I know Bridge 4. And you, Renarin Kalin, are Bridge 4. Renarin smiled widely. But Rock, don't you ever worry that you aren't the person everyone thinks you are? Everyone thinks I am loud, insufferable lout, so to be something else would not be a bad thing. Renarin chuckled. You think this about yourself? Maybe. I didn't know what I am most. I don't know what I am most days, Rock, but I seem to be the only one. Since I could walk, everyone was saying, look how bright he is. He should be an Ardent. Everyone thinks it's so obvious. I have a mind for figures, don't I? Yes, join the Ardents. Of course, nobody says I'm much less of a man than my brother, and nobody points out that it sure would be nice for the succession if the sickly, strange younger brother were safely tucked away in a monastery. When you say these things, you are almost not bitter, Lunamore said. Ha! Much practice must have been required. A lifetime. Tell me, why do you wish to be man who fights, Renarin Colin? Because it's what my father always wanted. He may not realize it, but it's there, Rock. Lunamore grunted. Perhaps this is stupid reason, but it is reason, and I can respect that. But tell me, why do you not want to become Ardent or Stormwarden? Because everyone assumes I'll be. If I go and do it, I'm giving in to what they all say. He looked for something to fidget with, and Lunamore tossed him more dough. I think, Lunamore said, your problem is different than you say. You claim you are not the person everyone thinks you are. Maybe you worry instead that you are that person. A sickly weakling? No. You can be you without this being bad thing. You can admit you act and think differently from your brother, but you can learn not to see this as flaw. It is just Renarin Colin. Renarin started kneading the dough furiously. It's good that you learn to fight. Men do well learning many different skills, but men also do well using what the gods have given them. In the peaks, a man may not have such choices. It's privilege, I suppose. Gliss says, well, it's complicated. I could talk to the Ardents, but I'm hesitant to do anything that would make me stand out from the other Bridgemen, Rock. I'm already the oddest one in this bunch. Is that so? Don't deny it, Rock. Lopin is, well, Lopin. And you're obviously, you. But I'm still the strange one. I've always been the strangest one. Lunamore pointed toward where Relaine sat on a rock near his squad, watching quietly as the others laughed. Oh, Renarin said. I don't know if he counts. This thing is what everyone always tells him. Over and over again. Renarin stared for a long time. Finally, Renarin stood up and dusted off his uniform, walked across the stone plateau, and settled down beside Relaine.
Let's go. Renarin
fidgeted and didn't say anything, but Relaine seemed to appreciate the company anyway. This is the beginning. The very first on-screen instance of what is going to turn into a romance.
I knew it! I knew it was
going to be Renarin.
I knew it was going to be Renarin. Let's go.
Lunamore smiled, then noticed that Huio was glowing faintly, and realizes that the Herdazian must have already learned to draw in Stormlight. As the Bridgeman took a break, he chatted with Leighton and tried to soothe his anxieties over the battle they'd had with the Unmade below Urethiru. Scar was the best Bridgeman among them, now that Moash was gone, but felt self-conscious over not having drawn in Stormlight. He teaches Rock how to draw it in, which seems to make the man feel better. Scar was a teacher at heart. Lunamore found himself looking out across the plateaus for some sign of movement in the distance. Lunamore almost stumbled as he saw what was assembling on the plateau to his left. Gods. Strong gods, like Silfrenna. Glowing a faint blue, they clustered around a tall Spren woman who had long hair streaming behind her. Uma Ami, Tukuma, Mafaliki, Lunamore started, hastily making the signs of respect. He had never seen so many in one place. You, a feminine voice said beside him, are so wonderfully respectful. It borders on being silly. Lunamore turned to find Silfrenna sitting on the side of his cauldron. He made the sign again. They are your kin? Is this woman at their front your new Atoma, Ali Kimura? Kind of, maybe, sorta, halfway? She said, cocking her head. I can barely remember a voice. Her voice. Fenderana, reprimanding me. I got in so much trouble for searching out Kaladin. Yet here they are. They won't speak to me. I think they assume that if they do, they'd have to admit to me that they were wrong. She leaned forward, grinning. And they absolutely hate being wrong. Lunamore nodded solemnly. He walked over to the assembled Spren. There had to be 24 or more, and placed spheres on the ground as offerings. When he looked up, the Ali-i-Kimura, the most important god here, was studying him. She rested her hand over one of the bowls and drew out the Stormlight. Then she left, turning into a streak of light and zipping away. The others remained, watching the practicing men and women. Silfrenna crossed the air to stand beside Lunamore's head. They are looking, Lunamore whispered. This thing is happening. Not just Bridgemen. Not just Squires. Radiance, as Kaladin wishes. We'll see, she said, then huffed softly before zipping away. So there's about a dozen winds of Honor Spren watching Bridge 4. And Fenderana, Syl mentioned her earlier in this book as her strange aunt that used to hunt Gloomspren.
What?
Yeah.
So, what?
Honor Spren are starting to show up. Yay! Rock went back to his cook station and called out to Hobber, but the man didn't respond. The lanky man sat on his little stool, leaning forward, his hand in a tight fist that glowed from the gemstone inside. Hobber's mouth moved, whispering, and he stared at that glowing fist in the same way a man might stare at the tinder in his fire pit on a very cold night, surrounded by snow. Desperation. Aww. Determination. Prayer. Do it, Hobber, Lunamore thought, stepping forward. Drink it in. Make it yours. Claim it. Lunamore felt an energy to the air, a moment of focus. Several windspren turned toward Hobber, and for a heartbeat, Lunamore thought that everything else faded. Hobber became one man alone in a darkened place, fists glowing. He stared, unblinking, at that sign of power, that sign of redemption. The light in Hobber's fist went out. Ha! Lunamore shouted. Ha! Hobber jumped in surprise. His jaw dropped, and he stared at the now-done gemstone. Guys, he called. Guys! Guys! Lunamore stepped back as the bridgemen left their stations and came rushing over. Give him your gemstones, Kaladin called. He's going to need a lot. Pile them up.
Let's go!
Bridgemen scrambled to give Hobber their emeralds, and he drew in more and more stormlight. Then the light suddenly dampened. I can feel them again, Hobber cried. I can feel my toes! He tentatively reached out for support. Drahi under one arm, Pete under the other. Hobber slipped off his stool and stood up. He grinned with a gap-toothed expression and almost fell over. Drahi and Pete righted him, but he forced them back, to let him stand precariously on his own. The men at Bridge 4 waited only briefly before pressing in with cries of excitement. Amid them, Lopin shoved in close and made the Bridge 4 salute. It seemed to mean something special coming from him. Two arms. One of the first times Lopin had been able to make the salute. Hobber saluted back. Kaladin stepped up beside Lunamore, Sifrenna on his shoulder. It will work, Rock. This will protect them. Lunamore nodded, then by habit, checked toward the west as he'd been doing all day. This time, he spotted something. It looked like a plume of smoke.
Uh-oh.
Kaladin flew to check it out. Lunamore, along with the rest of them, followed along on the ground carrying their mobile bridge. Lunamore ran at the center front of the bridge. It smelled of memories. Lunamore had known what might happen when he chose to come down from the peaks with Kefa. No new Atoma from the peaks had ever yet won a shard blade or shard plate. Still, Kefa had been determined the cost was worth the risk. They hadn't anticipated the cruelty of Toril Sadius, who had murdered Kefa without a proper duel, killed many of Lunamore's family who resisted, and seized his property.
Oh.
Lunamore roared, charging forward, and his skin started to glow. He seemed to be carrying the bridge all on his own, towing the others. Scar called out a marching song, and Bridge 4 thundered the words. Bridge 4 had grown strong enough to carry the bridge long distances without difficulty, but this day put those previous runs to shame. They ran at a sprint the entire distance, vibrant with stormlight, Lunamore calling the commands as Kaladin or Teft had once done. When they reached a chasm, they practically tossed the bridge across. When they picked it up on the other side, it seemed light as a reed. It felt like they'd barely started going before they neared the source of the smoke, a beleaguered caravan crossing the plains. Lunamore threw his weight against the bridge's outer support rods, pushing it across the chasm. Then he charged over. Others followed. Dabin and Lopin unhooked shields and spears and tossed one to each bridgeman as they passed. They fell into squads, and the men who normally followed Teft fell in behind Lunamore, though he had, of course, refused the spear Lopin tried to toss him. Kaladin floated overhead, holding his brilliant shard spear. Lunamore squinted through the smoke in the direction Kaladin was looking, and made out figures streaking away through the sky. Voidbringer attack, Drahi muttered. We should have guessed they'd start raiding our caravans. Lunamore didn't care at the moment. He pushed his way through weary caravan guards and frightened merchants hiding under wagons. There were bodies everywhere. The Voidbringers had killed dozens. Lunamore searched through the mess, trembling. Was that red hair on a corpse? No, that was blood soaking a headscarf. And that other body wasn't human. It had marbled skin. A brilliant white arrow stuck from its back, fletched with goose feathers. An Umkalaki arrow. Lunamore looked to the right, where someone had piled up furniture in a heap. A head poked up over the top, a stout woman with a round face and a deep red braid. She stood up tall and raised a bow toward Lunamore. Other faces peeked out from behind the furniture. Two youths, a boy and a girl, both around 16. Younger faces from there, 6 in total. Lunamore dashed toward them and found himself blubbering, tears streaming down his cheeks as he crawled up the outside of their improvised fortification. His family, at long last, had arrived at the Shattered Plains.
Aww.
This is Song, Lunamore said, pulling the woman close. Is best woman in all the peaks. Ha! We made snow forts as childs, and hers was always best. I should have known to find her in Castle. even if it was made of old chairs. Snow, Lopin asked. How do you make forts out of snow? I've heard all about this stuff. It's like frost, right? Ersic, Lowlander. Lunamore shook his head, moving to the twins. He put one hand on each of their shoulders. Boy is Gift, girl is Cord. Ha! When I left, Gift was short like Scar. Now he's nearly my height. He struggled to keep the pain from his voice. It had been almost a year. So long. Next son is Rock, but not same kind of Rock as me. This is, smaller Rock. Third son is Star. Second daughter is Kumatiki, is kind of Shell. You do not hive them here. Last daughter is another song. Beautiful song. He stooped down beside her, smiling. She was only 4, and she shied away from him. She didn't remember her father. It broke his heart.
Oh.
Song, Tuwaka Ilna Kalminor, put her hand on his back. Nearby, Kaladin introduced Bridge 4, but only Gift and Cord had been taught Lowlander languages, and Cord spoke only Vaden. Gift managed a passable greeting in Elethi. Little Song sought her mother's legs. Lunamore blinked away tears, though they were not completely sad tears. His family was here. His first saved wages had paid for the message, sent by Spanry to the peaks. Around them, the caravan was finally limping into motion. This was the first chance Lunamore had found to introduce his family, as Bridge 4 had spent the last half hour trying to help the wounded. Then Renarin had arrived with Adolin and 2 companies of troops, and for all Renarin's worries about not being useful, his healing had saved several lives. Tuwaka rubbed Lunamore's back, then knelt down beside him, pulling their daughter close with one arm, Lunamore with the other. It was a long journey, she said in Unkalaki, and the longest at the end, when those things came from the sky. I should have come to the war camps, Lunamore said, to escort you. We're here now, she said. Lunamore, what happened? Your note was so terse. Kefa is dead? But what happened to you? Why so long without word? He bowed his head. How could he explain this? The bridge runs, the cracks in his soul. How could he explain that the man she'd always said was so strong had wished to die, had been a coward, had given up near the end? What if Tifi and Sinnoh Kua, she asked him. Dead, he whispered. They raised weapons in vengeance. She put her hands to her lips. Then you... I am a chef now, Lunamore said, firm. But I cook, Tuwaka. He pulled her close again. Come, let us take the children to safety. We will reach the tower, which you will like. It is like the peaks, almost. I will tell you stories. Some are painful. Very well, Lunamore. I have stories, too. The peaks, our home. Something is wrong, very wrong. He pulled back and met her eyes. I will explain when we are safe, she promised. You were wise to usher us forward, wise as ever. No, my love, he whispered. I am a fool. I would blame the air, but I was a fool above, too. A fool to ever let Kefa leave on this errand of stupidity. She walked the children across the bridge. He watched and was glad to hear Unkalaki again. Glad that the other men did not speak it. For if they did, they might have picked out the lies that he had told them. Kaladin stepped up, clapping him on the shoulder. I'm going to assign your family my rooms, Rock. I've been slow in getting family quarters for the bridgemen. This will light a fire under me. I'll get us an assignment, and then, until then, I'll bunk with the rest of the men. Lunamore opened his mouth to object, then thought better of it. Thank you, he said, for the rooms. Aww. For other things, my captain. Go walk with your family, Rock. We can handle the bridge without you today. We have Stormlight. Lunamore rested his fingers on the smooth wood. No, he said. It will be a privilege to carry him one last time for my family. One last time, Kaladin said. We take to the skies, Stormblessed. We walk no more in coming days. This is the end. He looked back toward a subdued Bridge 4 group who seemed to sense that what he said was true. Ha! Do not look so sad. I left Great Stew back near city. Hobber will probably not ruin it before we return. Come, pick up our bridge. The last time, we march not toward death, but toward full stomachs and good songs. Despite his urging, it was a solemn, respectful group who lifted the bridge. They were slaves no longer. In their pockets, they carried riches. It glowed slowly, fiercely, and soon their skin did as well. Kaladin took his place at the front. Together, they carried the bridge on one final run, reverently, as if it were the brier of a king being taken to his tomb for his eternal rest. And that is where we will stop for tonight. I was off by about 5
Rock's
minutes.
Family!
This chapter really killed me when I was rereading it to take notes. I cried multiple times. I'm talking about Dabin. Really gets me. Dabin, the first bridgeman that they saved and who has had battle shock ever since and doesn't speak. Hobber breathing in Stormlight and getting his legs back. Rock and his family, obviously. Just all of it. Rock is my favorite of the bridgemen. He just gets it more than anybody else does, I think. Like, he talks about it when he's looking at Kaladin and he's like, Kaladin has gone through so much, but you, whenever he talk about him possibly losing a friend, like, that's when you see the pain. And I think that's something that's really, good about getting the Bridgman's points of view of Kaladin, is you start to see how other people see him, which is like, he's a god most of the time, but you can just barely see the cracks whenever it, the subject turns to people dying. But yes.
People that matter to him.
Yes.
And can break him.
Yeah, and even as we're kind of starting to see, he's having trouble with this idea that the ideal is, I will protect those who cannot protect themselves, and I will protect those I hate, right?
Uh-huh. Like,
how do you do that? How do you do both of those things? You know, it's, he's having a lot of trouble with the idea of violence in general. He doesn't want to fight the parchment. Yeah, he doesn't want to fight the parchment. They don't deserve this. How can he keep the oaths that he's sworn with, you know, when they contradict each other, which is something that the Windrunners have to deal with.
Well, there's a difference between protecting and attacking. If people are attacking you, you know, I figure it's probably okay to fight them because they're attacking. But if
yes,
people are attacking other people that can't defend themselves, then yeah, maybe protect them.
Yes, next time Dalinar is going to be in a vision, and we will learn what the Voidbringers are. Definitively, I will be able to relate it to other things in the Cosmere to you, things from Warbreaker, and be like, here is the explanation for what the Voidbringers are. For now, thanks everybody for joining us. Follow us on Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. Our cover art was done by the great Alx at Alx_BigBoy. Or follow them as well. That's it. We'll see you guys next time. For now, life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.